This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another power-packed episode of The New World Next Week, the 10-minute video series from CorbettReport.com and MediaMonarchy.com that gives you the text, the context, and the subtext on the stories that matter. Now, you may have known that we were away for a couple of weeks, so a story we haven't hit is the Gulf oil spill, massive as the story and the catastrophe is. So a way to get into this story as well as keep it up to date is to go yesterday from Reuters. BP-owned Alaska oil pipeline shut after the Trans-Alaska pipeline, partly owned by British Petroleum, shut down on Tuesday after spilling several thousand barrels of crude oil into backup containers, drastically cutting supply down the main artery between refineries and Alaska's oil fields. The accident comes at a difficult time for BP, the largest single owner of the pipeline operator, holding 47%, as it struggles to plug a gushing Gulf of Mexico oil well. The shutdown followed a series of mishaps that resulted from a scheduled fire command system test at Pump Station 9 about 100 miles south of Fairbanks, said Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, the operator of the 800-mile oil line. Now, this is a story that I've been going over quite a bit on the previous weeks of the Media Monarchy radio show, so we'll have linked up here for you in the show notes for this new episode all of the other Gulf oil updates, and it, of course, runs the gamut like, of course, the oil spill first responders getting sick, and just like 9/11 being told they don't need any safety gear. We've got possible criminal negligence. We've got the Coast Guard threatening CBS news crews. We've got the media ignoring Goldman Sachs' connections to the Corexit chemical dispersant that they've been spraying. We've got eugenicist Ted Turner suggesting the Gulf oil spill could be God's work. And it gets uglier and uglier when we discovered that there were drills going on immediately preceding the explosion. It happened on April 20th, one of the seemingly high, holy, occult days where events seem to take place. We have some of the dock workers signing, being coerced into signing confidentiality hush agreements that they won't talk about anything. So, James, while I'm not ready to go on record and try and say that Gulf oil spill is an inside job, there certainly are a lot of the same red flags that we see in a lot of these massive, catastrophic, catalyzing events.
Right. Well, I think you'd probably be in a better position to make that call than I would, because this is one of those stories that I feel, being based here in Japan, just really isn't being covered in the same way that obviously it must be being covered in the States. And not having access to that 24/7 news cycle, I really don't feel that I've really gotten the story in its entirety. So what can you say about the news coverage of this so far?
I know the one thing I can say personally is just the other day at work, in the break room with the newspapers all spread out all over the table, coworker said, "Oh, I'm so sick of the Gulf oil spill story." And I don't think it was from a I don't care kind of standpoint, but it really speaks to the way that the 24/7 news babble goes. We'll ram a story down your throat, even if it's of massive importance. But whether that's the Gulf oil spill or Tiger Woods, we'll shove it down your throat until you're sick of it and you want to change the channel and see what else is on.
Right, exactly. And I think that's probably one of the ways in which the news cycle itself functions, by helping to get people sick of topics and divert their attention when the final solution is brought in. People are so sick of it, they don't even care to look into it. So I certainly hope people will be keeping their eye on Media Monarchy for ongoing coverage of this and listening to some of the back episodes where you've covered this before. But moving right along for story number two, what do we have up?
Story number two by way of MSNBC, and again, this is a story that's only growing and building as the days go by. U.S. military told to get ready in Korea standoff. The White House said Monday that President Obama fully supports the South Korean president and his response to the torpedo attack by North Korea that sank a South Korean naval ship. In a statement, and we have the link to the press release from whitehouse.gov, the White House said Seoul can continue to count on the full backing of the United States, and said U.S. military commanders have been told to work with their South Korean counterparts to ensure readiness and to deter future aggression. The administration said it endorsed President Lee Myung-bak's demand that, quote, North Korea immediately apologize and punish those responsible for the attack and, most importantly, stop its belligerent and threatening behavior. Last week, a team of international investigators accused North Korea of torpedoing the Cheonan corvette, the aforementioned naval ship, in March, killing 46 sailors in one of the deadliest clashes between the two since the 1950s Korean War. The U.S. still has about 28,000 troops in South Korea to provide military support. The two Koreas, still technically at war, have more than 1 million troops near their borders, and we do have a lot of flashback supplemental background links for you, again, provided in the show notes, where Kurt Nimmo, of course, notes that North Korea is another enemy made in the USA. We know South Korea on alert as North subs have disappeared into the East Sea. We have Hillary, the Secretary of State, threat-aganding, fear-mongering, running around North Korea, severing all ties with the South. And we do have something from a writer on gowans.wordpress.com, bringing up, James, something that we have discussed, and that specter is there, and that is a Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Right. Well, that's what we have to be at least thinking about in this case, because we obviously know that the globalists love to pull staged events out of their hat, and especially love to do it at sea, which obviously is where false flag, the name itself, comes from, a ship running the flag of its enemy. So certainly something we have to be thinking about. And obviously this is a story that is going to impact me here in Japan if this does become a hot war. So something I'll definitely be keeping my eye on. What can you say about the way this coverage is coming across in the U.S. right now?
It's only slowly started to build. I had one guy, and again, this is the good thing I think about, you know, doing the kind of work that we do, James, is that basically most of our friends and coworkers know that we're news junkies. So once they know and they're kind of interested, it's really fascinating to see when people come to you and what they want to talk about and what they want to ask about. I had a guy at work basically bring up the Korean situation before it was really on my radar. And once I got into it, I saw, wow, he was on it. But something we want to quickly mention is the connections. And again, we mentioned an enemy made in the USA. This, and then the joke is always, Donald Rumsfeld is like the devil. He's there at aspartame and swine flu pandemic and continuity of government training. And your episode from last summer, episode 89, Meet Donald Rumsfeld, goes into these areas. And of course, the landmark article from The Guardian from 2003, The Two Faces of Rumsfeld, gets into, again, how we pretty much, and by we, I mean the oligarchs and the Western finance international banksters, fund both sides.
That's absolutely right. And for anyone who hasn't looked into that, I suggest you do, because it's just quite disturbing, the things that he's been involved in his illustrious career. But moving right along, let's jump to cyberspace war for our third story.
For our third story, again from Kurt Nimmo, Pentagon Cybercom preps war against the American people. NSA Director Lieutenant General Keith Alexander told the Senate Armed Services Committee in April that he would work to protect the privacy rights of Americans online. An interesting comment coming from a guy who heads up an organization responsible for illegal, warrantless surveillance of everyone, everywhere. NSA is the only place in the U.S. government that has the capabilities we need for defense of private networks, says James A. Lewis, senior fellow and cybersecurity expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, and of course an insider think tank dominated by all our fine freedom-loving friends like Brzezinski and Brent Scowcroft and Kissinger and others. Now, why we're updating this story, and again, this has been something we've been tracking for well over the last years now, is the fear-mongering of a new digital Pearl Harbor. And we know, and have gone over time and time again, an iPatriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting for, again, a catalyzing, catastrophic event that gives our misleaders the political capital to do what they already wanted to do. But the update to here is that last Friday, Alexander was headed up and appointed to the newly activated Cyber Command, designed to conduct virtual combat across the world's computer networks. And as The Guardian notes, it was a low-key ceremony, and that's, of course, to not draw media attention to that the military is now basically, again, as we've said, they're going to fight the net. as an enemy weapon system. And if we just jump back to May 13th on cyberspacewar.com, Pentagon says military response to cyber attack possible. And as we know, they're prepping us for the coming of, as what Webster Tarpley has termed, virtual flag terrorism.
That's exactly right. And just another piece of this puzzle, it turns out that Lieutenant General Keith Alexander just happens to be a Bilderberg attendee. Surprise, surprise. So absolutely, the same old Shadow Masters are lining their ducks in a row. And I cannot stress how important the virtual flag terrorism whole paradigm is becoming. And that's why cyberspace war is so important. And on the note of Bilderberg 2010, I just had an interview with Daniel Eschelin, and he has got the leaked agenda for this year's Bilderberg. So please stay tuned to CorbettReport.com this weekend for more on that and my forthcoming episode of the podcast, which will be about Bilderberg 2010. And I certainly hope people will be tuning into MediaMonarchy.com this week as well for more updates on these stories and more.